Today's scripture is taken from the book of Matthew, chapter 18, verses 21 through 35. And if you'd like to follow along, that can be found in the New Testament at page 20. Then Peter came and said to him, "Lord, if my brother or sister sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times?" Jesus said to him, "Not seven times, but I tell you 77 times. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he began the reckoning, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. And as he could not pay, the Lord ordered him to be sold, together with his wife and children, and all his possessions, and payment to be made. So the slave fell on his knees before him, saying, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' And out of pity for him, the Lord of that slave released him and forgave him the debt. But that same slave, as he went out, came upon one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him by the throat, he said, 'Pay what you owe.' Then his fellow slave fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' But he refused. Then he went and threw him into prison until he would pay the debt. When his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their lord all that had taken place. Then his lord summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you?' And in anger, his lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt. So my heavenly Father will also do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother or sister from your heart." Amen.
Hello, hello, okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Patty. I was asked to do the testimony for today. Bonnie Bell helped me pick out the reading. When she asked me what I was doing, I wanted to talk about forgiveness, because to me, forgiveness is something that I didn't even know was an issue for me until I got sober. So when I was growing up, I guess today I'm just going to talk about my journey through finding forgiveness through recovery. And one of those tools was going through AA. I have always said that I think everybody should at least attend one AA meeting in their life, because and it would have to be a good one, because there's a lot of bad AA meetings out there, but when you do find a good one, really what it is free therapy based on your relationship with God. A lot of people don't know that AA is, I don't want to say Christian-based, because it's not, but it's all about your personal relationship with your higher power. And when you are an addict and you've had the life experiences of somebody who has a severe addiction, you don't go into AA like, "Hey, what's going on this Saturday night? I'm going to go to AA." You usually get there because, you know, honestly, on that Saturday night, nobody else wants to hang out with you. You don't have any other options that would even be fitting at that point. So with my history with addiction, even as a young kid, around the age of like 8 or 9. Like, I knew I wanted to be a drinker. I knew that that was something that like enticed me. I don't, you know, I think about that not a lot anymore, but like, why? Like, my parents were not drinkers. They didn't drink in the house. I never really had anybody in my life who had issue with alcohol besides extended family. But I remember as a very young age, like, it was something that, like, I wanted. And I would even start trying to sneak alcohol, like, at a very young age. You know, and that was a lifelong up and down. Like, alcohol was my best friend, and alcohol did a lot of good things in my life, you know, like, as far as bringing me out of my shell, meeting people, opening me up to new ideas and experiences. But at the end of the day, it stole my soul. One thing that I've heard in recovery is that when you give in to something, that you are spiritually bankrupt. And that was always hard for me. And I know I've talked to a lot of people like in recovery about this, but like, I always thought that I had a really good relationship with God. I always thought I had faith. Growing up in a Catholic school, like, those beliefs were forced on me. As far as like the what do they call it? A creed, the creedal church of Catholicism. Even as a young age, like, just really like did not sit well with me. That's one reason that, like, I love Underwood. I'm going to probably be skipping around a little bit. But, like, when I came into Underwood and learned that there was even a church that you didn't have to say those things, that you could just believe in God and just learn about faith without, you know, like, saying something, like, so definitive that, like, if you don't believe this, you're going to spend the rest of your eternity in hell because you don't believe in this one thing. Like, yeah, I couldn't sign up for that. But, I mean, Underwood has never pushed that. Underwood has always been a place where we can question our faith. Like, it's going to skip back to, like, the addiction thing. Like, going through recovery, like, when I first started in recovery, I, like, being a drunk alcoholic, one thing that I would like to do is listen to Joyce Meyer and Garden. And, like, that was, like, and I don't know if anybody's familiar with Joyce Meyer, but she's very extreme. And, like, I really resonated with her until me and Mark, we went to St. Louis, and she was having a production there. And she started speaking in tongues, and it got really weird. And that's, like, when it was, like, hot and cold. I'm like, nope. And again, that was kind of like when I found Underwood, which was just, yeah, what I needed at the time. Where was I going with this? No. So with being in recovery, I found that my biggest problem was myself. I found that alcohol was never really the problem. It was my way of thinking that was the problem. I was the type of person who would hold on to a resentment like nobody's business. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. They say that resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And this isn't something I realized until like after I was sober, but like, if somebody would look at me weird, that would, like, stay in my head all day, and I would think about that person, and I would, like, rip them down in my head on all the reasons why they're the bad one, and then they would, next time I saw them, they would, like, look at me, and they would smile and be like, hi, how's it going? I'd be like, oh, and, like, that resentment would completely go away until, like, the next person came and did something to me, and it would start all over again, and that was my life. That was just, like, this continuum. And, like, through AA, like, I found the tools to let that go. And that's like, the solution. When you first get into recovery, you go to a lot of meetings where people are just talking about the problem. They're talking about, like, the hustle. They're talking about how they got there. But they don't talk about why they stay. Like, why do you stay going to meetings like AA or any type of 12-step recovery? And AA was founded by an organization called the Oxford Group, and I believe they had 8 steps to begin with, but like with this one, they put on a couple. And I wanted to just share, this is something that, so like, yeah, some of you will probably, hopefully none of you will have to ever go to an AA meeting, but this is something that often gets read in the beginning of a meeting. And I know I used to chair a lot of meetings, and I always really enjoyed reading this part. So I wanted to share that with you guys today. It is chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought that we could find an easier and softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all the power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove all our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I cannot go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection." A description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas: that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and see that God could and would if he were sought. So this is what we kind of sometimes start our meetings at, talking about this, but really this is the steps in which got me to love myself again. And I find with these resentments, a lot of times I can't let things go because I am unwilling to accept God's forgiveness. And to accept God's forgiveness, you have to have a conscious contact with God, and you have to be able to practice these principles in all your affair. You have to do the next right thing. You can't just like the parable said, asking God for forgiveness, him giving you that forgiveness, and then turning around and not doing the next right thing. And I like that expression, doing the next right thing, because it simplifies it. Sometimes we get caught up, I have to do all this stuff, especially if we need somebody's forgiveness or we need to forgive somebody. Just keep it really simple. What is the next right thing? And going through these steps, they're in a order for a reason. And a lot of people, when you decide to go this road, or if you need this type of intervention in your life to get good with God and yourself and your family, people relapse at step four. That is like the critical one. And that one is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of our lives or of ourselves. And in that step, what you have to do is write a grudge list. It starts off, you write a grudge list of everybody that you have a grudge against. And I mean, they want you to be very detailed. So that's it. Column one, who do you have a problem with in your life? Column two, this is the fun part. What did they do to you? Oh yeah, I can talk about that. I can talk about what this person did to me. Step three, how did that affect you? What were the qualities in which it affected you? Did it affect your self-esteem, your pride, your finances, your, you know, and like there's a certain set that you fill that in. And after that, you know, like this is the biggest part, and this is where people are like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like you have to talk about your part. Well, what was your part in that? What was your part in that grudge? Put everything else aside. What was your part in that grudge? And that's where you can start to learn how to forgive. And yeah, the first time I did that with a sponsor, there was a couple people on my list that I'm like, yeah, but let's just, you know, I couldn't just absolutely, you know, let that go, let that grudge go. And she's like, okay, you need to do more work on that. And I remember I was sitting at the library at the time, and I was like, she wanted me to write down, like, I had to do this, like, assignment. And there was, like, this person in my life, and they'd been in my life for a long time, and, like, I could just, you know, rattle off all the things that I didn't like about them. But, like, I had to, like, do this assignment by my sponsor. And it was a light bulb moment. Like, you know, like, we don't get many of those in life. But it was, like, this weight. I was, like, I had to, like, go into detail about all the things. I'm like, yeah, well, I was talking crap about her, and, you know, I, like, went through all these details, but I had to completely just get rid of all the nasty things that she had ever done to me. And in that moment, it was, and I still think about this, and this was, like, a life-changing thing for me. Like, I felt this weight just come off of me, because it's like, well, she was probably just reacting to me. She was probably just reacting because I was talking crap about her. And she was just having her reaction, and I probably would have had the same reaction, and she just has her own issues, and, you know, she has her own issues, and it's not about me, and it's letting go of ego. So no, I mean, AA really has saved my life. The forgiveness of other people have saved my life. There's a step in here. It's steps 10 and 11, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted that. I think sometimes I'm like, over conscious of like being sorry, especially to my kids, because I still have shame for the way I acted in my life. But no, like when you're wrong, they say do a 10th step so you don't have to do a fourth step. Because if you just get rid of these resentments, say your part sorry, it doesn't matter if they are still wrong. They can still be wrong. They're still allowed to be wrong. That's fine. They can live with that. That has nothing to do with you. You at least say sorry for your part, and you can walk a free man. For the past 6 months, I've been working a lot on step 11, and that's just where you take a personal inventory of your day. And this is something that doesn't come easily for me. If I don't have somebody in my life holding me accountable to do this step, I don't do it. So I work with a couple women in recovery, and we just, being held accountable, just take a picture of our daily reprieve. And I keep it really simple. I write down, where did I struggle? What did I do well in? Where did I have fear? Where did I see God? And what am I grateful for? And this has been a really good practice. Sometimes I don't want to do it at my end of the day. Sometimes I do it in the morning of the day, but it's been really helpful because, again, it just allows you to put, you know, at the end of your day, you don't have to take what you didn't like to the next day. And you can also, I have issues with this, like, congratulate yourself for what you did well. Sometimes I forget, I can really focus on, like, my partner at work who really irked me. I can think about that all day, but, like, I don't take account what I did well in. And sometimes when we take account what we did well in, you can forgive yourself for doing not so good. So anyway, I'm going to end there. Thank you so much. And that's it. Thank you.